Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing!
Hi, I am Mary Kay.
And I'm Louise.
And together we are Novel Gazing, the podcast that talks literary fiction. We're recording today's show on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. So, you know, if anything juicy happens between now and then and we haven't talked about it, that's why. On today's show, we're discussing current affairs and news from the literary fiction world, the differences between literary and genre fiction, and also sharing our latest reads.
But before all of that, let's hear from one of our sponsors.
Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing!
Okay, so here's the one piece of news that we are all hearing the most about because we are all glued to all of our media about the pandemic virus that's happening around us. We're hoping for the best. Everybody is pulling their weight. In the meantime, while we're all kind of sequestered, which I don't know what it's going to be like by the time this episode comes out, but right now I'm like not leaving the house for my own safety and the safety of others. And I am, of course, on Twitter constantly because it's like, I guess I'll take a break. I guess I'll get on Twitter because I'm like in my house, you know? So one of the things that I came across is this article from Electric Literature about what it's like to try to promote a book in the middle of a pandemic.
Awkward. Is that just the summation of it? Just one word? Awkward.
It is awkward and depressing and making a lot of authors feel selfish for caring about how well their book is doing, which I don't think is totally fair because many things can be true.
Like, it's just so hard at the moment, isn't it? Just trying to figure out like where your priorities should be and what they should be.
Yeah. It's... Well, what did you think about the article?
Well, I thought it was really relevant. Like, we are in unknown times slightly at the moment, aren't we? And you think of all the everyday things, particularly in the world of literature, that go on and go on every single day. Mm-hmm. You kind of think, actually, everything is changing and everything is suddenly very different, and yet we don't know what that new difference will be. So yeah, it's an interesting one, and I feel for you if this is your debut week, or you know, because these books have been worked on for years and years and years in many cases, and then it's a very complicated space to try and navigate, I think.
Yeah, especially because we don't know how long we need to hold off doing a lot of social activity or any social activity. So I kind of understand why businesses are like, let's not postpone anything until we have to.
Exactly.
But I think, and I get both sides of that, but it is just a bummer all around.
Basically. It is. There's no other way to say it.
Yeah, because you can't win. Like, no matter what, like, you can't, one way or the other, you're losing. So, one thing that I did notice both in this article and then also on my quote unquote breaks of Twitter, is that a lot of authors are kind of doing like I don't want to say grassroots, that's the wrong word, but like very much like DIY promotion. So
yeah,
posting like, hey, my book is coming out, you know, March 24th or whatever. But no one's going to, like, book tours are being canceled and all of that. So they'll be like, if your book is being affected by this, subtweet it and we'll promote it and buy it and all of that, which I think is really nice. But I can't imagine it is as effective as some of these more wide scale marketing opportunities. But still, it's like we're, you know, trying to hold it down. Seems like everybody is helping each other. Still a bummer.
It's like finding the steps for being proactive, right? And it's finding a way to gain some sort of control, I think, in this vast unknown circumstance. And even if it's just tweeting or sharing or, and these, as you say, these DIY initiatives almost, it's amazing what people can do under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And what they can come together with, and what they can the collective spirit, I think, is kind of lovely in a way.
Yeah.
That people all bond together and go, look, we are all doing this for the greater good, so to speak. Apart from everyone who's hoarding toilet rolls, you are not.
What, hoarding toilet paper?
Toilet rolls, loo rolls?
Nope, I'm not hoarding them.
No. And
I brought one package because I am a normal person.
Exactly.
Who poops a normal amount. I mean, but to be fair, some people do it more. I don't know.
So yeah, it's interesting to see the collective spirit that's getting together, but equally, you know, I do think there's going to be some mad number crunching in, say, 6-9 months where people have to deal with the impact of what this has been.
Yeah.
You know, financially, business-wise, and the amount of businesses and people that it's going to impact on the way. I have a lot of sympathy for anyone who's caught up in that pattern.
Yeah, and I think on a long enough timeline, it does affect everyone.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, but speaking of business, your article that we're talking about today is from the Harvard Business Review. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I used to work in a business school library, which was a really interesting experience in that you got to see a very specific type of literature. And one of the really common themes was, and this is the article that I picked out to talk about, was the case for reading fiction. Mm-hmm. And this idea that reading something makes you a better person in that particular way. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, you can gain increased empathy, increased cultural awareness, increased sensitivity, etc., etc. I wanted to throw it out and go, what do you think of that? Like, it speaks a lot. It's something that I've never quite come to terms with, but I can see the relevance of it. But equally, then I think of, you know, like being at school and thinking, well, I don't want to read what you tell me to read. I want to find my own. I want to find my own way.
Mm-hmm. I really loved this article because it starts off by saying that several CEOs recommend reading every day.
Yes.
Which surprised me a little bit until I realized that they were reading nonfiction only.
Yeah.
And that made a lot of sense to me. And I loved also how the author said, that's very good. Don't not do that. But it is not the same to read for gathering information as it is to read for the story of something. And
yeah.
And I loved how, as I was reading it, I was realizing that this is responsible, I think, for a lot of people's emotional intelligence, like literary fiction specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Because it makes you consider situations you've never been in or situations you have been in, but from a different perspective. And I think that merit is somewhat lost on people who don't value emotional intelligence.
I can see that.
So I don't really know what the point of me saying that was, except for that it's something that I noticed when I was reading it, because to kind of refer back to one of our former episodes where it said, like, men read typically nonfiction and women read typically fiction.
Yeah.
There's definitely merit in doing both, and it shouldn't be a gendered experience, I don't think. Like,
all right.
I think that it's important to know facts, but it's also important to feel things. Like, I think both of those have their place.
So, like, if you're in the workplace, say, and you had some sort of working-based problem, mm-hmm. and your manager came up to you and said, here is the bridge... I was going to say the bridge to Terabithia, but that's a really traumatic thing to be presented with in this fictional scenario. here's a copy of a book that I read, and I think it will help you out of your problem. What would mm-hmm. you say? Like, how would you deal with that?
If they gave me a fictional book
yeah.
to read?
Yeah.
What would I say? It depends on the book, probably. And who is giving it to me.
Right.
If it was somebody that I trusted their taste, I would be like, okay, I'll give it a shot. Or, thank you.
Thank you. That's so kind.
But, you know, if it's your boss, you kind of have to do it. Even if you disagree with it, you read it, and then you have your opinions about it. And the worst thing it could do is make you more sure of where you were to begin with. Right.
Uh-huh. You see, now I don't think I'd be that
you'd be that
considered
generous
in my response. Okay. Let's say, like, I think it would just be more of a, well, that's great that you presented me with this reading, but can we resolve this problem as well?
Yeah, true. Yeah, I get that too. It might be a little condescending.
Yeah, I think what was really interesting to me as well in, like, with the experience of working with the business school and the business library books is that there was this really big trend for summarizing key readings. So like, for example, you'd say here is this article, maybe of 10 pages, here's the 5-paragraph summary mm-hmm. of it. And I thought that was really interesting in drawing that distinction in the actually reading the actual book, like doing the work,
right,
gets you this result and gets you this increase, you know, empathy and so on and so forth, rather than trying to get like the easy win.
Totally. And I'm glad you said that, because I had forgotten this article mentions like plot. Doesn't it talk about plot versus like overall, like the work that goes into making the plot? Like,
yeah,
it's, I mean, anytime you read the back of the book, it's like, and then you read the book, it almost never does it justice. And I'm not critiquing that style of writing. Mm-hmm. It's just, an, like you said, oversimplified version or really, really like spruced up version to get you to buy the book, you know?
Yeah.
And it leaves out a lot of the nuance and the more important parts of the book. Like, remember that Twitter trend a while back that was... was it summarize a movie plot badly?
Oh.
It's like, that's what to me reading for just plot does.
Okay.
I think my favorite one was like, privileged son inherits father's very successful business but doesn't want to. And it's The Godfather.
Like, oh my goodness.
It's, right, it's like... It's like the best movie of all time, and then we just flattened it out. So I kind of feel bad about reading plot summaries. Like, I would get frustrated even as a student when someone was like, well, I know how it ends. It's like, well, okay, but you didn't do any of the work to get there.
Like, yeah, it's like, that's great, but it means nothing to you how it ends.
Right.
Like, you know the technicalities of it.
Right.
But, you know, so-and-so may get stabbed in the Roman Senate, but it'll mean nothing. to you at that point, the emotional quality, the value of it, the journey.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Shall we leave that one there? I was like, now, you know, read the book, essentially.
Yes, I agree. Read the book. So before we talk about the bulk of our episode today, we'd like to hear a word from our sponsors who make this all possible.
All right. So let's introduce today's talking point, which is the idea of literary fiction versus genre fiction. And it's something that came up quite a lot in the planning for these episodes, figuring out what we wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
In that a lot of people talk about this, and a lot of people have this kind of conviction that one is better than the other, that they maybe don't know like what the other one is, that there's this kind of smackdown going on between these two forms of literature, and you need to pick a side. So if you were going to pick a side, Mary-Kate, and let me emphasize that you do not need to at this point, you can go no, where would you go?
Where would I play? Like, which side would I fall down on?
Yeah.
Literary fiction, for sure.
Okay. So you read a lot of genre, though. So why is that pulling you towards literary fiction?
Well, I think that the what sets genre fiction apart is a literary element.
Okay.
So I find myself often disappointed with a lot of the works that I read in quote-unquote genre fiction because they don't make me feel a whole lot.
Right.
Or they don't make me think outside of the text a whole lot. I'm just reading, kind of like what we were saying before, I'm just kind of reading to be entertained, like reading for plot points, not really invested in many of the characters. I will say, because I do read a lot of horror in the horror genre, the thing that sets that genre apart for me from other genre writings, like, don't even come at me with a romantic... Like, I've been bored with them since seventh grade. But anyway, and again, that's just my personal preference. It doesn't make it bad or wrong. It's just what I like better. I do think that some of what sets the horror genre apart is like a new way to scare someone, which is interesting.
That's interesting, yeah.
So even if you don't care about those characters, you care about the monster or whatever is happening at them. So I do think that I would fall on the side of literary fiction, though, especially as someone who has studied literary fiction, because I think that that set me up to notice all of the really interesting new style or craft or inversion of tropes or whatever that's happening. Mm-hmm. So I like that a lot, but I also think it depends on what you are reading for.
Yes. So this is we're touching here on like reader response theory, aren't we, essentially?
Yeah.
Where you have this idea that if you read a book, you read it in certain modes, in certain ways. Mm-hmm. For example, if you're reading a picture book to a kid at bedtime, you perhaps read that in a different way than you read a recipe book,
mm-hmm.
or a different... you read to get certain information at certain points. So I think with literary fiction, you do have that awareness that you're reading something that is deliberately trying to find that resonance in your life,
mm-hmm.
and to find that like emotional value. But also, before we go any further, if you're thinking, oh, this is great, but I'm very patchy on what literary fiction actually is,
mm-hmm.
we talk about this in our episode zero. So go and hunt that one out. And we won't retread it here, but we'll just sort of signpost you that way.
Yeah. I think that's a good call. It's a short episode, too. So
bite size.
I think it was called, like, literary fiction in 2 words or less or something like that. Mm. 2 minutes or less, that's what it was.
Yeah. But, yeah, so how would you define, like, genre fiction, then?
Well, that's a good question. What do you think?
I think, right, because I was reading about whether literary fiction could be considered a genre, so to speak, itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, genre is this very flexible idea of the characteristics of a story, right?
Yeah.
And if they all adopt the similar characteristics, they all fall into a similar genre.
Mm-hmm.
For example, children's books aren't a genre, right. But a romance book is, or a or Duma Lit, as we were talking about in the last right. episode, is, and I can say that now without laughing, which is a step in the right direction. Epic poetry, something very specific, the characteristics of it grouping together and creating this recognisable group of text, that's genre for me. And it can be something incredibly specific, mm-hmm. post-colonial, empire, whatever. Mm-hmm. It can be that. But literary fiction, for me, has this much wider umbrella, almost. Mm-hmm. In that it can be that as well, but it can also have a much more textured resonance in your lives, in your existence. And so I think the best recommendation for that, for me at the moment, is I bought a collection of Cynthia Voigt novels from the secondhand bookshop the other day. And they are sort of technically young adult. Technically, if you're going to class them as a genre, there are probably coming of age novels, Bildungsroman and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so literary in tone and feel, and the questions that they ask, they reach really into this kind of magical otherworldly place.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, it's not like a them or us, or, you know, it's an either or, it's a kind of everything.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the more you were talking about it, the more I agreed with you. And that's kind of why I wanted you to go first, because I was having a hard time conceptualizing that. But it definitely does feel like the genres are very subjective, and that it's more of like a continuing, ongoing Venn diagram situation where, like, you can be more than one thing.
I've never like wedded to this, things can be just one thing or the other.
Right. And I think reading literary fiction helps us develop that sense of like gray area, right? I think,
yeah.
not to retread too much, but I think that's one quality of literary fiction, is that it is somewhat reflective versus, it focuses more on like the why and how than the what is happening.
I love your idea about like the grey area. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that bit that's almost misty that we can't quite pin down, but we know that is in everything and everywhere.
Right. Yeah. So I think that, I mean, I definitely think for me that different books have different motivations, and readers have different motivations in reading whatever book they're reading. Like, sometimes I want a book that will turn my brain off. Like, it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's easy, and it doesn't make me contemplate my own existence. Like, sometimes I want that. And there's nothing wrong, I don't think, with wanting that or enjoying that.
But, like, you don't want it every single time.
No, most of the time I
get that,
don't.
Yeah.
And as I'm reading it, I am frustrated because it's not making me think. Like, it's like watching TV to me, which also, I mean, depending on the TV show, that I feel like that exists in literary, there can be literary TV. Yep, I said it. This is the hill that I
die. Good. Do it. Do it.
I mean, Breaking Bad is a masterpiece, y'all. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's genius. So, yeah, I think it just depends. That's really frustrating. And I know that some of the feedback we get is like, they should be more definitive. They should say what they, like, they should know more things. And that's like not really what literary fiction
yeah,
is about.
I think you have
it's
to
not
acknowledge
about
the unknown.
Drawing that line in the sand.
Yeah. So. Is there sand? Is there a line?
Right. What is like, sand?
What is the line?
What is a line? But to your point, here in our outline, it does sound snobby of me to be like, this is not really literature. And I think it is subjective, but also I've kind of accepted that and made peace with it and moved on with my life, that I'm a little bit of a snob when it comes to books.
You see, now I don't mind that in a way. Like, yeah. if you have that conscious decision of, oh, I don't know, this works for you, this doesn't work for you, and you're cool with that. I worry sometimes that people can get very much like, I want to follow the zeitgeist, I want to read the current new brand thing. And it's like, no, you no. just no. I got very northern then.
I liked it.
It's when, you know, the passion kicks in. It's just follow your own vibe and your own path. And if you have specific things that, so to speak, float your boat, go ahead and float it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's things that I don't necessarily look at in the bookshop that much, mm-hmm. or that I don't necessarily pick up on the library. I'm not great on crime, for example, because I will read two or three chapters in it, and at the end they'll be like, oh, so and so did it, and I will barely remember the name of like anyone who's been in that book, because I just
so you
don't
mean like crime fiction, like thrillers.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, yeah. They can be like, oh, Mr. Smith did it, and he's been the criminal since day one. You should have spotted all these clues. And yeah. I'm like, look, really, it's a book, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel that way somewhat about a lot of noir as well, because okay. it's like, I don't know. Like, I know a lot of people really like that sort of hard-boiled detective. But for me, it's like, I can't distinguish between the characters because, number one, they do have names like Mr. Smith a lot of the time, which we talked about before. Like, I'm not good at that. But the other thing is, like, I don't know how they feel or what their personalities are. I just kind of know facts about them. So that's, and for me, that is, it puts me outside of the text and makes me not care about it.
I can see that for sure. Like, you don't have that point of attachment, do you? You don't have that point of, like, registering some emotional connection between you and that relatively two-dimensional other at that point.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm a pretty sympathetic or empathetic person in life. Like, whenever somebody does something terrible, I always try to think, like, okay, why would they do that? Like, why? Yeah. What would, not like, why would you do that? But, like, what was the thought process that went behind that decision? And even though it made me mad or sad or whatever, to say, like, they probably didn't mean for that to be the outcome. Like, that probably wasn't their intention. Doesn't make it okay, but you know what I mean, right? Where it's like, I try to consider other perspectives, but I don't do that in books so much, which is weird, because I do it in life, but I don't do it for characters nearly as much.
Yeah, I think the key thing is, right, that you can have that familiarity and that comfort point, but also be aware that every now and then it doesn't do any harm to, like, fall out of it. And to, like, find another perspective. And this is where something like, and I know this will seem awfully self-referential, but the book Riot, like, the challenges, where they say, oh, can you read an author by, a book before so-and-so, or a book by a woman, or a book by something, you know, these certain characteristics. Those challenges can be really helpful in pushing you past your patterns.
Yes, that's true.
And making you find someone new.
Louise, you're such a good person. I had a diametrically opposed reaction when I saw the list. I was like, got it. I'm never doing that. Never, never. I was like, going down the list, like, sorting them out. Because I was like, oh, I want to be, you know, supportive of our thing. But I do think it helps us get out of our comfort zone. However, if I have tried it twice, which is, you have to try everything twice, right? Because the first time could be a fluke, good or bad. I feel like that's by due diligence.
Well, no, that's it, isn't it? You've tried it. That's like, it's what I ask people that, like, I teach and talk to, is, you know, you try it and you come to a considered opinion. But if you just look at it and you're like, I don't like it because it's purple,
right?
Like, my dude, no. Right. Just no.
Right. You got to try things before you can be Ron Swanson and be like, I know what I'm about, son. you got to know things before you decide.
Got to read the book. Got to know.
Yeah. So why do you think it is that we put literary fiction on a pedestal? Because we do, right? Like, I for sure do.
Yeah, I think it's like cultural, in that we have this idea of reading being this aspirational, like, pyramid sort of model, in that you start with your kids' books and then you're told to read up and read to more complicated, more difficult, more elaborate stories as you get older. And like, where do we go once we've figured out literacy, right? We go push towards literary fiction, which is, right, you know, meant to be the special ultimate goal of literature. But for years, like, I couldn't bear it, and I couldn't be remotely bothered with finding this mythic goal that someone else had told me, oh, it's going to be really good for you. Because I'm like, you know, I think I'm doing all right so far. And then you think, all right, well, maybe I should find this and understand it on my own terms and my own choices. And then you sort of think, well, actually, there is something here, but it's not because someone else has told me that it's here and told me what to find. It's about, like, finding it on my own terms, in a sense.
Okay, let me think about that for a second. Because I don't think you're wrong, but I do think that I come at it from a different perspective.
Different angles are good.
Okay, good. I'm glad you think that. Because I, and this is an unpopular opinion, I don't understand the fascination with young adult literature. I just don't get it. I don't know why. And I know that that is controversial. Sorry?
I'm giving you a dramatic ooh.
Oh, thank you. I love drama. I love other people's drama. Let me be clear.
I'm very helpful.
But I just, thank you. But I've just, like, even when I was a young adult, I remember being like, but shouldn't I be challenging myself? And I think that probably says more about me than it does the non-genre of, you know, age appropriateness. But I do remember, like, getting frustrated when things were too easy. Like, when it was just, like, moving along. I was like, yeah, this is not challenging me. And I'm really competitive by nature, so I think that could be the case. Which is a weird thing to be, compete with, is, like, which art is the best? Okay. Like, you know?
In one corner, Picasso. In the other, Degas. Fight.
Right. yeah, so I do think that I think I do believe that literary fiction is better. Like, because that's where I put my value.
Right.
So if for example, someone didn't have the same values on reading as I did, it would make sense that they would be like, no, it's not better. I mean, just like with anything. Like, it's better for me, because that's where I'm aspiring to go.
Yeah.
But also, you know, on the other hand, I have gotten so frustrated when books will unnecessarily use synonyms that make it less accessible. I really have put down books before, because I was like, this is ridiculous. You're just trying to isolate everyone else. Like, why? Like, there's got to be, I don't know. I know that this is largely subjective and we're kind of arguing moot points, but...
Yeah. No. I'm here. If people can answer that, like, why is language often this really... Why is language...
That's where you're gonna end the question. Why is language...
Yeah, just we'll end it there. Full stop. Why is language...
Oh, man. But I definitely, I do value literary fiction more. And I think that I value it even more when it can adopt another genre into it. Because that is so versatile. And it is like a gateway either way, right? Like, when I realized that a lot of the literary fiction that I loved, like Cormac McCarthy, for example, was also horror, I was like, maybe I'll also like horror. So, and then it was. So, like, I think that, you know, bridging the gap between literary fiction and genre fiction is not a bad thing at all.
There is no gap. It is all right. Fiction. It is all readable.
You're right.
Don't, like, pit things right. against each other. Don't make the books fight for your love. Yeah. Just read the books.
There's room at the top.
Yes.
Oh, There Is No Gap is the name of our band.
Our first single. Our first single. Why Is Language?
Love it. Yes.
Done. The end.
Okay. What are you reading now, Louise?
Right. Okay. So I am going through a phase of getting some amazing holds in from the library. You know, when you're like number 302 on the reservation list, and I am now number one, and I am reading The Other Americans by Leila Lalami, which is
like?
Lovely. Yeah,
really
lovely. Eloquently written.
Okay.
I'm only about halfway through it so far, and it's all about like an American neighborhood. There is a death has occurred, and it's all about the people that that affects and impacts, and it touches on immigrant culture, how to exist in American society. And it's really interesting reading it from a clearly external perspective, because sort of tying with the Cynthia Voigt stuff that I'm reading, I've been really reflecting on like how I first came to read about like American culture in literature. And this has been a really useful and vital part. It's so beautifully written. So yeah, I really recommend it. But do note that it could be awful in the last 50%. I haven't got there yet. But the first 50% is gorgeous.
Is it fiction?
Yes.
Would you consider it literary?
Yes, immensely so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. That sounds cool.
About yourself?
Oh, okay. I am reading Grady Hendrix's next book, The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, which comes out at the beginning of April. I am enjoying it a lot. It is both fun and full of references to vampire culture, which I really enjoy, and Southern culture, which I really enjoy. So it's fun. And I think that it's, I would say that it's a horror genre novel, but it's so smart. It might not be literary, but it's super smart.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does.
Like, it's very self-aware. Like, at one point, the protagonist is like, okay, he's not a vampire, that's stupid. Like, it's like very much like, that's impossible, that's not what's happening. But, I mean, if listeners, y'all have read any other Grady Hendrix, like, it definitely comes with the, I don't want to say gore, because it's not exactly gore. I mean, it is gore, but it's just such unique descriptions of gross.
Well, I think you just named our second single.
Which, what is it?
Unique Descriptions of Gross.
Yeah! I love it.
The album, it's coming soon. Just stay tuned.
Right, stay tuned. Maybe that's the music that will, like, tune up, like, bring us in and out of the episodes for now.
Oh, that's amazing.
Just kidding. I'm not a musician at all. So, that I'm straight up lying. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that one too. It is, I don't want to say like it's a quick read because it is long, but it does kind of move at a clip, you know, like it.
Yeah.
It is very plot driven, but the characters are really well rounded and accessible. So I think I like it. So it's good. And he's the nicest man. So yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's always nice.
It is.
So, before we sign off, I did want to say we got some listener feedback, which we always appreciate.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. And one of the things that was requested of us is that we give more recommendations for books that we like. But because we're not, like, really exactly, like, a recommendations podcast, we decided to like tell it slant. So next time we're going to talk about books that changed our lives. So it's like disguised recommendations, right?
Subtle. Isn't that what tell anybody. They're sneaking in under the radar.
They're in a trench coat and a hat. And they're going to sell videotapes out of the lapels.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm sold for this.
So we're looking forward to that. So if that's something that you are interested in,
be sure to join us.
Yeah, be sure to subscribe so that you get your podcast hot off the press. And however you get podcasts will be there. We want to thank y'all for listening. Thank you to our sponsors who are amazing and make all of this possible. And don't forget to tell your friends about us. Where can they find you, Louise?
So you can find me online. I have my website is didyoeverstoptothink.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at ChaletFan.
And you can find me, that's Mary Kay, at MaryKayMcBrayer.com. But I'm also on Twitter at MKMcBrayer and Instagram at Mary Kay McBrayer. So it's really like, don't overthink it. Just type in my name and I'll pop up.
You'll find it.
Yeah, and we do love hearing from y'all. So if you feel like throwing us a line, definitely do it on any of those social media. Especially because we're social distancing on there like all the time. So we'll be here.
Yeah, we're there.
Yeah, thank y'all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Fab, thanks. Bye.
Bye.